The art that is the furthest from God is writing, so says author and Buffalo rancher Dan O'Brien. As part of SDPB's participation in the Great American Read, we've been talking with prominent authors about books all summer, visiting them where they live and work, and now we'd like to bring those conversations to you. What makes a really great book? How does where you are from change who you are as a writer or as a human being? Dan O'Brien has written iconic South Dakota books, including Buffalo for the Broken Heart and Wild Idea. He's a rancher reinventing how we live and eat on the Great Plains. This summer, he agreed to let SDPB visit him at his ranch and home at Wild Idea Buffalo. We rambled across the grasslands with Dan O'Brien as our teacher. Today, we'd like to bring you just an excerpt of that conversation. Here, I asked him how he ended up being a writer when, growing up, he hadn't been much of a reader. When did you know you wanted to be a writer? Because you didn't grow up as a reader. When did that start to take hold of you?
You know, I grew up in a middle-class, middle-American place in Ohio. We were a good family. My parents loved each other. They loved us, three boys. It was the Cleavers, in a way. But we didn't, it was not a literary family. I mean, there was, you know, maybe my mom would read what was on the bestsellers list in the New York Times or something. But there weren't a lot of books around, and I didn't read at all until I was in my early 20s. But what there was at my house was my mom was a singer, and she was sort of, you know, local musicals and things like that. She was in them from the time I can remember, always. And so in a way that gave us permission to understand and to operate in the world of art. And in my case, since I can't sing or play an instrument, it turned out to be writing. And I think that all of us have a need to be understood, and whether we're trying to be understood through our music or whether we're trying to be understood through our words, I think it's a very human thing. We want to be understood, and sometimes we don't understand it ourselves. And with me, I decided I'm lacking something. I want to express myself somehow, and the only thing, the art that is furthest from God is writing. You know, this is not playing an instrument or something, or dance or something like that. I think just about anybody can be a writer, but it's a blue-collar job. And I grew up in kind of a blue-collar family, so it made perfect sense to me.
What do you mean it was a blue-collar job? Just you had to show up to do the work?
Yeah, well, when, you know, writing is, the wonderful thing about writing is you can always fix it. You know, if you can always sit down and fix it, but that takes getting up, as you say, every morning, going to work, figuring it out, thinking about it, just like you would a job. You know, there are those times when the muse speaks to you or lightning strikes or something, but they're pretty few and far between. Most of it is just figuring out which word to use and in what order, and that's work.
When do you know that you have it? Do you ever know that you have it?
When I get so sick of the damn thing that I got to send it to my agent, I know I must have it because I can't do anything more. And I do believe in that you do once in a while, you'll read something and say, yep, that's it, that's good. It's not always true, but it feels that way at the time. But I think really too many writers worry these things to death. I mean, they write it and rewrite it and rewrite it. And I've come to the conclusion that I try to get it as good as I can by myself. And then I send it to some people, my agent, stuff like that. And but there comes a point where I don't take advice from anybody unless they're writing a check. You know, then I got to think about it. But you know, you have to have trust in yourself that this is the story and it's been told.
Do you get discouraged? Do you ever want to quit writing?
Yeah, it crosses my mind. I always think this is my last book, and I've written 14 of them now. Jesus, I didn't think that was possible. And I find myself saying, well, that's 14, you know. But then a couple weeks later, you know, I think, what if a guy was going down the road and they saw a dog with three legs? And that's a new novel. And I just can't quite stop. You know, I don't know what I'd do with myself if I did.
What's your process like? Are there different seasons for you when you're writing? I mean, there's so much work to be done outside of the work that needs to be done for writing in your life. How do you fit those two things into one life?
You know, I don't understand how the work gets done. I really, really don't. I don't understand how novels get written because they take years. And with me, I definitely get more writing done in the wintertime because I'm basically driven indoors, okay? That doesn't mean I'm not working in the summertime. I mull these ideas around constantly, day and night. For 50 years I've been doing this. And you just have to have faith that when you sit down to actually type, that they're still going to be in there and that your subconscious has been working on them the whole time. And I believe that's true. If you, I think it's kind of like cooking or something, you know, you just got to let things simmer for a while before they're really right. And so it takes time.
Is there a book that helped turn you into a reader in your 20s? Is there a book that helped turn you into a writer?
Well, the first book I ever read was Lolita, so that gives you some idea of my early life. But there were a lot of books, and it's been since that day when I quit the football team and accidentally stumbled into the library on campus. There have been a lot of books, and a lot of them have changed my life. I mean, to start off with some of the classics that, you know, I was asked to read in classes and things. And, you know, you'd fight through and you'd fight through, and all of a sudden, Faulkner made sense, which is an amazing thing in itself. I mean, Moby Dick, probably my favorite novel. Just, I didn't know you could do those things with words. And that kind of excited me. And there have been many, many books since then that have just, you know, I get done reading and I just want to throw it in the corner and say, well, what the hell am I? It's already been done. You know, it's this is too good. I can't function at this level. But you can. You can.
What is it about Moby Dick that captivated you then and continues to, really?
Well, I guess, you know, Moby Dick was probably the first big classic book that I ever read. And just from the very beginning, Call Me Ishmael, it still gives me chills. And I never understood why. And you know, I think I have an understanding of why now, because, you know, Ishmael could be me. I mean, he's a narrator that is this kind of an everyman. You know, here's a guy, he's not even a sailor, and he decides he'll go and see the watery parts of the world. And I think that a lot of us can identify with that. And then here's this guy that makes these profound observations of not only the characters on that ship, but the natural world too. And I'm thinking, Jesus, this is an important person, and it came out of Melville's brain, and it's part of Melville. And once you have that kind of a combination as you read a book, you'll never forget it.
When you take on the responsibility of writing about the natural world, what do you have to consider things differently, that becomes a character in and of itself, or that, you know, land becomes character or place becomes character? Because you're not just telling a story of, you know, a guy who saw a three-legged dog or a couple that falls in love, there's so much more at stake, it seems.
I'm not sure that that's premeditated, that part of it's premeditated. I mean, I really, and I know this is a bit of a cliche, but I think that as a writer, you tell the story that you know, and you tell it the best way you can. And if it's going to find a readership out there, people are going to have to find it. You've done your job. And to say, geez, you know, we got to, I got to make this thing profound because it's to working about with nature. I mean, it either is profound or it isn't. It's what you know and it's how you visualize it. And I can tell you this, that I would have never guessed that there's a readership for birds, for buffalo, for grass, but there is. That you don't need a million people. You need 20,000. That's not very many.
Do you talk about Frederick Manfred a little bit and learning from him? What was that experience like?
Well, when I decided that I might want to try to write, I was already 20 or something, and there was no such thing as MFA programs or anything like that. But I did know that there was a place in South Dakota where this writer by the name of Frederick Manfred was teaching. And so I always wanted to spend some time in South Dakota, and I came out here. And to be honest with you, I mean, Fred was, you know, this huge man. And he was, I'm sure this phrase has been used a million times with him, but, you know, he was larger than life in more ways than one. And he was so ebullient about writing and the whole idea of the fellowship of it and the importance of it, that was infused into me. But I also realized that Fred was just a guy, you know, and that gave me a little confidence, you know, because, you know, Fred, there was no fire leaping out of Fred's ears, you know. I mean, he was energetic, but this wasn't something that I couldn't do. I thought, well, heck, I can do this. I can do this. If Fred can do it, I can do it. And that was something that he actually pressed upon me personally and said, you know, you can do this. And, you know, when you're 20 years old or 22 or whatever I was, that makes a big impression.
What did he teach you about writing? The process of it, the work of it, the daily grind of it.
Well, I think that the most of, I'm not sure that Fred actually taught me much of that. You know, it was more theory of or importance. Why are we doing this at all? That kind of thing. The daily grind of it, I mean, I learned that from my father. He got up every morning when I was a kid and went to, he was gone every morning when I got up, you know, working. And I think that that's what you got to do when you write. You know, you do it in a different way, but when you're plugged in and you're really going on something, you really have to focus on it. And that was the part you know, Fred did believe in some sort of divine intervention of blam, you know, you hit it, and I know that does happen, but basically, he knew it was a blue collar job.
Do you have an understanding of the why now that at 70 that you didn't have at 20? Why are we doing this at all?
You know, I think that the reason we write, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that we write. I mean, you can write for recognition or for money or because your mother loved reading or whatever. But I think finally, like so many things, it's an obsession, and we don't really know why we write. I know I don't. I mean, I could certainly make more money doing something else. I don't read my books over again. I write for the experience, I guess. I mean, I really enjoy writing. I enjoy getting to the point where, okay, we have this manuscript. It's a whole. It's not finished, but it's a whole, beginning, middle, end. And I sit that on my desk and I say, okay, now let's fix this thing. And it's just like around the ranch here. I mean, I get up every morning and the phone starts ringing about 6 o'clock, and it's like, what's broke? You know, what do we got to fix today? You know, and I think that carries over into this idea of building a book and making changes in there that change everything. Just a few words can change everything, and those you get better at recognizing which five words that is. You know, because you know, I don't think anybody. Let's put it this way. The best books are not planned. They come out of someplace way down here somewhere, and you don't know how it happened. And, you know, that's a whole idea that the Greeks had about who wrote this. It must have been the muse. It couldn't have been me. And I think we all get that feeling from time to time. But in fact, of course, it is you, and it's who you are.
That's author Dan O'Brien. We spoke with him outside his home and ranch in rural South Dakota. The Great American Read Fall Kickoff premieres tonight on SDPB-TV. That's at 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain. One of the books featured tonight is one of Dan O'Brien's favorite, Moby Dick. And we'll bring you more from Dan O'Brien and other South Dakotans who live, read, and write in the state throughout the next 5 weeks as we celebrate the Great American Read. Don't forget, you can vote for your best love novel every day. Head over to sdpb.org for more details about how to do that and links to the PBS site.